Well, it's that time again, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for watching. Thanks for tuning in.
Wisdom in Golf, Golf WRX, and Golf's Perfect Imperfections.
Yes.
So we're going to be going outdoors soon.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. Yeah.
Well, soon-ish.
Well,
for us.
You guys are going Mesquite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going Dominican Republic.
Well, when they're listening to this, we'll have just gotten back.
Well, yeah.
Well, you and I.
Yeah, we'll be back.
We'll Sean. Be, exactly. But, you know, we had our first walk, like we talked about in the last show, our first walk outdoors where it wasn't freezing. Mm-hmm. It was above freezing.
And the sun was out.
Wasn't much above freezing, but it was above freezing. So that typically really, and the sun shines a little brighter, a little higher in the sky, and then you become hopeful. And so, you know, I know many of you, like I saw some footage on the Golf Channel from South Carolina. And things are already starting to bloom over there.
Nice.
And so it's creeping up. You know, it's going to be soon north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Chris Cody's range was yes. open last week.
No.
Yeah, he was like, snow's melted, range is open. It's like, no. Dang it, I want to go.
Oh, man. So they're in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So soon, it's only another 7 hours north
yes.
so by car.
Yeah.
And it'll soon reach us. So
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed we get an early spring.
Yeah.
The gopher said no. I said,
did
well,
he?
Screw you, gopher, okay?
Oh, dang it.
Yeah, the gopher's not out yet.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh.
So I don't put too much stock in the gopher.
I need outdoors.
Yes.
Feel like even just my Instagram content feels so boring right now because it's just the same setup.
Well, you know.
All the time.
You guys are going to be in Mesquite soon.
I know. I'm going to have to, like, pre-record a bunch of stuff.
Big time. Yeah. So now that you're going to be going outside, for many of you who've, you know, and listen, the winter training is the greatest thing ever because you don't play the next day, you don't play the day after that or the week after or the month after. It's several months being in here, you know, hitting into simulators. The advantage to that is that you get to work on your swing, mm-hmm. you know, and fine-tune your long game and fine-tune your golf swing. And then come springtime, you open up the doors, you kick everybody out and say, okay, I'll see you back outside for some short game, some putting, some bunkers, some on-course play. And that's where, you know, it's time to put the ball in the hole and stop playing golf swing. So there's a time to, you know, perform and there's a time to train. So when you get outside though, it's pretty shocking because now you have all this space mm-hmm. and the wonderful golf course architects who just love to put bunkers and out of bounds and water hazards, prevailing winds. Now you got to contend with wind. You got to contend with the lie. You got to contend with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, so what are the things that you need to do to be able to perform outdoors? So we're gonna give you some good tips on that right now.
First and foremost, don't get frustrated the first time outside. That's just not fair to yourself. I've done that so many times where
it's like what's going on with
you have
me,
such a good winter.
Yeah.
You know, training and then you get outside and everything just goes to SHIT.
Yes.
And you're like, what the heck is going on? But it's normal.
It's completely normal because it's shocking. You know, you got to reacclimate yourself. It's like an astronaut going into space and coming back a few weeks later and, you know, feeling Earth's gravity again.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a different deal. So the first thing, obviously, in your training, especially if you're training with us, is you have an intermediate point. So you reacclimate yourself with your intermediate point, And because the old side vision's going to start messing with you, and it's going to, you're going to think that you're going into trouble again, and you'll be reacting to those mirages. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't, I you know, this fairway is still narrow. This darn fairway is still narrow. Yeah, yeah. And it feels like I'm releasing towards trouble right now. I don't want to do that. And then you yank it to the left trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that intermediate point that you're going to be releasing through or to the right edge or left edge is really going to save, you know, save the furniture for you. And you want to keep doing that.
Picking your flight plan will be crucial. Like the right shot shape for the hole.
That's right. And the right option.
Yes.
Like we talked about last time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going, okay, where's the best place to miss here?
Right.
You know, the pin's at the back, and over the back of the green is this, you know, big hump. And if I'm over the green,
yeah,
I'm in trouble. Like I have to go over the hump, and it's downhill, and the ball's going to even, you know, there's certain situations on golf courses where if you're in the wrong spot, you got no chance of getting close even with your short game.
Yeah.
So, you know, A, don't be there. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, hey, the pin's all the way at the back. It's at 175. And when I really flush my 7-iron, it's 175. So, okay, I can relax, hit a nice 7-iron, and I know I won't short side myself. And if I miss it slightly, then it's going to be in the center of the green.
Yeah, because majority of your choices on the golf course are fully in your control.
Hear that?
So you have to be able to set yourself up for success.
Yes.
Especially when you're coming from indoor and going to outdoor. Because it's such a shock, you have to really be mindful of the decisions that you're making and just assuring that you're going through the process of even being clear cut on a decision, because that's something that you can easily forget about when you're going outside for the first time again, because you're just so excited to be outside. You're just like, okay, let's go. Right. And then you forget about all the little details that are massively important.
Exactly.
Cause I've been there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what wisdom is all about. It's a lived thing. Mm. And plus, I mean, if you've improved on your distances over the winter, if you've been training with Moo and you've been doing some speed training, I think you're going to have a wicked awakening, Sav, when you hit the golf course again.
Yeah.
It's going to throw off your also club selection too, I think.
What are you hitting, 7-iron now? What have you been flying
7-iron? Well, I've been warming up with my 6-iron a lot, and I'm flying my 6-iron like 200 yards carry.
Ay, ay, ay. Yeah. Wow.
I've gained like a good club and a half, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to translate to other clubs. It's
6-iron is 200 yards?
Same with Bryce. Working with Bryce, he's like noticing a growth in his other clubs. Like a 6-iron used to go, and it's a blade, used to go 190 carry. Now it's like 205 carry, right? So now it's kind of changing his style of play, essentially, and allowing him to have more options that are never there.
I think I'll play from the tips this year.
Yeah, you definitely can. Yeah.
Well, you know, now that I've got Catalyst, I'll do the same.
Yeah, no more excuses.
No more excuses.
Dad used to use the excuse, I'm over 55. I'm a senior, so I don't have to tee off from the tips anymore. And I'm like, you're good enough still to tee off from the tips.
I didn't know I sounded like that.
He was like, I've earned this.
That's embarrassing.
I earned it. And I was like, Dad, but you're still good enough to play from the back. Teams.
I know I am. A lot of members get pissed off when I play from the blues instead of the blacks.
Yeah.
Well, why? I like to, you know, hit my par fives in two. It's enjoyable for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, alas, I'll be teeing off from the blacks with you guys, and I'll be happily doing so.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I know that I'll be gaining some distance for sure.
I like the perspective that we have on this course, like on our home course, especially from the tips. It opens everything up a little bit.
Yeah. You get to see more.
Yeah. For me at least, because when I was playing from the whites, when we started being members here, I used to play from the whites and it felt like the trouble just came up too fast because of my distance. And now that I've acquired more distance, I need to, like,
the holes change.
Really, the holes change a lot. And then when I play in the women's league, and we're teeing up from the yellows or more of the forward tees.
Yeah.
Oh man, it just throws me right off because I'm like, what do I take off the tee?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, club selection changes from there. Right?
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the rangefinder, your tech comes in very handy.
Yeah.
That's an important piece right there is getting your yardages. And so it's wind, lie. So you look down at your lie and you're thinking, I don't know how this is going to come out. It looks like it's sitting down a bit. Okay, so that's one more club. Mm-hmm. If it's sitting up in that first cut of rough and you got a flyer lie, okay, then, you know, it's a different story. But if it's sitting down in the rough a little bit or it's sitting down and on a tight lie, that won't fly as much because it spins more and it doesn't fly as far. So you go, okay, one more club there, little crosswind, that's two clubs. And then, you know, and then you turn the computer on and you say, okay, with this, do I feel like I can get there easily but without, you know, compromising my position around the green? Is this going to be too far over the green? Because typically here at the golf course, you know, all the trouble's over the greens.
Yeah.
Like most golf courses, because you want to see the ball land.
Yeah.
True.
And architects keep that in mind. So they always have the greens from back to front, facing from back to front, so you get to see where the ball is landing. And it's one of the pleasures of golf, right? To see a ball land on the green.
Right.
And so that's why most of the time, over is not good.
We should also talk about, because a lot of people listening, they're probably in areas like us where the snow is going to be melting and the golf courses are going to be really wet. Bunkers are going to be wet. Fairways are going to be wet. So the little adjustments that you make in
as
those
in no roll.
Yeah, no roll, but also like it's so easy to take a massive divot when the fairway is wet here. So you want to feel almost like you're thinning your shot.
Well, that's the thing. So if we look at prediction, and we'll talk about like the next thing we're going to be talking about is chipping. And If we look at the prediction process on a golf shot, so you say, okay, I got this already existing flow of momentum that's delivering grass clippings in the direction I want the ball to start. So we have one in our kinetic chain facilitation series where we're sending divots into the trees, and it's at the beginning of the season. But like when it's really wet, you don't really want to get ready to send divots because they'll be beaver tails.
Right.
Yeah.
So you say, all right, I need to intentionally hit it thin. So the way we do it is we have you perform a practice swing above the ball. You say, okay, if the club is hovering 2-3 inches above the ball and you let it release in the direction that you want to start the ball, which is right or left or right over the intermediate point, do you feel like you're going to miss the ball? And the answer is yes. So you let it release and you see where the club is passing above the ball. And it gives this amazing reference to the brain. So you say, okay, I go lower just to the top of the ball. It feels like I'm going to nick the top of the ball now if I release that way. So you get lower to the middle of the ball. You say, it feels like I'm going to top it or scull it if I release that way. And then you go to the grass. And you want to feel like you're grazing grass. If you graze the grass, it feels like you're going to hit the ball thin. Well, when it's really wet, that's exactly how you want to hit it.
Yeah. And then for bunkers, I know when the bunker is wet, I like to play the bunker shot like just like a long chip swing.
Okay.
Like clip it off the sand.
Okay.
Depending on like how compact the sand is.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. So the point is, at the beginning of the season, sometimes the bunkers are washed out and you're chipping off clay.
Yeah.
That is when you would do that.
Yeah.
But if you got some good sand, but it's firm, then it's back to, hey, I'm just going to spray a divot of sand onto the green where I want the ball to land.
Yeah.
But you notice your divots come out more compact.
Yeah.
Instead of fluffy, then it's like, and then it immediately tunes into the amount of momentum you need to land the sand where you want to land it. Mm-hmm. So when the sand is compact, you need less momentum, and then when it's fluffy, you need more momentum.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So there's something to consider. Now, what if you have to hit a flop shot over a bunker and it's a muddy lie, but when you put your foot down, the water doesn't come up, so you can't take
relief
from standing water? What would you do?
You like play it like a bunker shot.
You play it exactly like a bunker shot and hit an intentionally fat shot. Mm-hmm. So you're going to take that beaver tail and you're going to throw it onto the green with all the muck.
Yeah.
Throw the muck onto the green with momentum. You say, okay, this much momentum will send the muck to the front of the green. Mm-hmm. The ball comes off of that carpet and will get some good roll forward. You're not going to have backspin the way you normally do out of a bunker, but you will get over the bunker and onto the green and have, you know, you'll be able to try and save your par from there.
You can do that also with, like, out of like the pine needles and stuff.
Yes. So loose leaves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the season, when all the leaves that have fallen over the fall, you're going to have some leafy situations, mm-hmm. especially if you're near the trees. That is definitely a bunker shot. Mm-hmm. Pine needles as well. You remember the pine needle shot we hit when we went to play at
Winter Park? Dad and I both landed in the trees,
short
in the pine needles. And I was like, is this a bunker shot feel or is it not? And I went first.
Yep.
And I just played it like a normal shot,
right?
Like a normal chip, which was the wrong call. So that gave Dad the green light to play it like a bunker shot feel, and he was able to execute his properly.
That's it. I was able to save my par.
Yep. So and it was over a bunker too.
Yeah, and I appreciate the guinea pig situation there, Sav.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We had a nice. Actually, I made birdie because it was a par five, so we were both short of the green in two, and the trees would come out and around. So it's a very positional hole. And, you know, the lies were similar in the pine straw.
Yeah, yeah.
And after I saw yours, I'm going, okay, there's a lot more cushion of pine straw underneath there. That's a bunker shot.
Yeah.
And so.
And, you know, I was thinking it was a bunker shot feel right off the bat, and I did not go with my instinct.
Well, it's because you couldn't predict how it was going to come out.
Yeah.
And because you hadn't been in that situation in a while, mm-hmm. because we were in here.
Yeah.
You know, but as soon as I saw you do it, I'm going, ah, and the brain went, no, 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 no. Yes, 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 yes. And I went,
yeah.
But you still got me in the end, Sav. She birdied three out of the last four holes and stuck it in Dad's heart.
Ugly birdies. Just.
It was birdie.
Yeah, exactly.
It was birdie, ugly par, ugly birdie, nice birdie. Yeah.
We're just getting warmed up.
It was shocking.
That's what's so cool. I mean, you know, if you prepare, listen, here's how you prepare. I have a flight plan.
Yeah.
You did. I have an intermediate point to get me to the flight plan. Mm-hmm. You did. I predict that when I let my momentum release in that direction, it feels like the ball will go that way. Mm-hmm. And you did. But you sculled it.
Yeah.
So?
Yeah.
The ball goes off, lands in front of the green, rolls up to the front of the green, easy two-putt par.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Move on to the next hole.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the next hole, you sculled it again, but not as bad. It was a better scull, and it ended up a foot and a half from the hole. Mm-hmm. That's a really good miss.
Because it's so difficult to adjust to turf interaction when you're hitting on mats all winter.
Yep.
And then going outside. So, yeah, my prediction process was good. My choices in club were good.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was
a miss
in the right direction.
Exactly. You missed it in the right direction. Mo would say you missed it straight. Fantastic.
Yeah.
and that's the thing. You prepared properly, mm-hmm. and you put the luck on your side. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know.
I gave myself a chance at least.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and that's where we're just, I was just talking to, we're having a discussion on, you know, who's going to win the Players Championship.
Yeah.
Right? And so, by this video,
we
would have known what the winner is.
Yeah.
So, because we don't know yet, I know that in preparation for the Players Championship, they go back to past champions. And one of the greatest wins I've ever seen Fred Couples have is at the Players Championship. And he's coming down 16. He's in the fairway. And he goes for the green in two. And 16 is risk reward, big time. Mm. Big risk, but big reward. And he goes right at the flag with, you know, Freddie plays a fade. So the you have to play it to the fat part of the green. And the pin was back right, hanging over the water. Mm-hmm. Oof. And he, I mean, the pin, and he, you know, hits it out there. And you see the camera following the ball from that camera angle, which is right behind the 17th green. And, or somewhere, it's on the, in the same pond. And so you see it land right over the railroad ties, mm-hmm. and right in the rough there. And and it trickles onto the fringe. And so he, you know, gets it there by the skin of his teeth and then walks up there and nails the hole and makes eagle. And, you know, big fist pump, right? Mm-hmm. So he capitalized from that. And that's how he won the 1992 Masters on hole number 12, which never happens. But it was so wet that day, he hit it short and the ball didn't come back into the water. And he was able to get up and down.
Just getting lucky.
For par. Man, that was the luckiest break ever.
Right.
And he went on to win the Masters. So it seems to like, you know, when you're playing well, you end up getting luckier than average.
Right.
And then he gets on 17 at the Players after that massive eagle on 16. And he's got a downhill skin, you know, very fast putt. And very skittish, and hits this beautiful putt right into the hole, and just like the best celebration I've ever seen Fred, because Freddie's just aloof, mm-hmm. you know, and to see him celebrate that big, mm-hmm. is really beautiful to see. So the Players really brings that out, because I played that course once, and I was very, very upset that at that time they didn't have caddies.
Really?
Right? Whoa. Mm. So, you know, you go, I mean, it's a big bill. You want to play there. It's like $600 to play for the average Joe. And the PGA rate at the time for me, I mean, I got a really good deal. It was like $90. So I appreciate that.
That's a nice deal.
But I'm going, hey, you got a caddy for me today, because I don't have the knowledge on this golf course. Mm-hmm. He says, no, we don't have a caddy program.
Right.
And I was like, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. My guys don't know the course any better than I do, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I shot 84 that day, because, I mean, there's so many shots on that golf course that are, you know, they're going to make you, you know, put a tread mark in your shorts and knock your knees together. And so, like, on 17, I dunked it in the water. Mm. Like, I stood up there and I'm going, boy, that's tough. Like, I was already okay. Let's put another ball in, and I hit my shot. I'm going, that's probably wet, and then it was. So I needed a shot off the bow to get my bearings on the hole, mm-hmm. because you know there's nobody there whispering in your ear. I remember going to Pinehurst, and I played with a caddy, and it made all the difference in the world. I'm really playing well. I'm swinging well. My caddy took the time to watch me warm up to see how far I would hit the ball. And we get to hole number 9, and the green is not deep, but very wide. And the pin's kind of center. And in the center, it's the skinniest part of the green. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me, he says, you're thinking fade right now, aren't you? I said, yeah. He says, No, not a chance. It's a draw. Take one more club, hit the draw, right? Mm-hmm. So I go ahead and hit the draw to that flag stick, and I hit a really good shot, like I'm 6 feet away. And then I get up there, and behind the green was the abyss. It was like, if you miss long on that green, mm-hmm. you're like 60 yards beyond, and you've got this shot coming back that's just impossible.
Wow.
So, you know, local knowledge, I had no knowledge of the golf course, but because I had a good caddy who knew my game, you know, it was very pleasant. So I really had a rough time. I really loved the way the course set up, and I could see why it's an exciting venue. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I remember, you know, hitting a shot and I'm going, okay, finally I hit a fairway. And I get there and I got no shot. I'm in the fairway and I got no shot. I'm like, what is that? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I had to carve this incredibly, you know, difficult shot, and you know, the wind's coming this way and I had to fade the shot, and then I had to carve it so hard, but the wind wouldn't let me. So, I mean, I hit it to the left of the green, and then it was like an impossible up and down. It was like an automatic bogey. So on that particular hole, you have to be left center or else. So there's so many shots on that golf course. If you're not in the right part of the fairway, you can't see what's going to happen on the next shot. It's completely blind. Mm. And that's when you really need that local knowledge. So they sent a survey afterwards for me. Mm-hmm. And I just put a big X on the survey. I said, I needed a caddy and you let me down.
Right. Yeah.
2 years later, the caddies. And I'm going, yes. So I can't wait to go back to play that golf course with a proper caddy, mm-hmm. and really enjoy, you know, now that I've seen it once, of course I'm gonna have it. You know, it's the kind of golf course that you need to play a couple of dozen times before you actually start scoring it. Mm. And that's why it's such a prize.
Right.
It really is a prize. If you win that tournament, and the winners of that tournament is like Tiger – didn't win it eight times like when he goes to Torrey Pines,
right,
or he goes to Firestone. He's only won it once or twice. Mm. It is a prize. And so when you see somebody winning there, you know they were firing on all cylinders, and they were the best players that day. No doubt about it, they were the best player.
That's cool.
That's a very cool heritage there.
Yeah, it is. And that's why they call it the fifth major. Mm. You know, a lot of people cuss and swear and,
but yeah,
you know, when they go play that golf course, because it is, it's a beast.
I've heard Brian Harmon let out some words of discomfort.
Some words of discomfort. Yeah.
It's like, that's for real. It makes you, turns you to, you know.
And that's, you know, the next Netflix Full Swing series, they have to follow Tyrrell Hatton around that golf course.
Oh, I don't know. It'll be
R-rated. That's going to be obscene.
Yeah, be
rated R. Yeah, it's going to be a rated R golf course or a round of golf, I should say.
Right.
So, you know, finally, you know, what we want to talk about, since you're going outside, and this is something, you know, that really plays into your prediction over the ball, is chipping. Now, you've had your druthers with chipping.
Still am working on it.
You were still working on it, yes. Yeah. We're getting close. Yeah. But putting, we figured you out big time.
Yeah, putting has been a godsend in terms of just having the ball roll into the hole. It's fun.
It's now one of the things that that really has turned Moo into a great putter. Like, I would call you a great putter now.
Well, I don't know about that.
Your stroke is there.
I haven't seen the...
Your stroke is there. I mean, you still need the track. You need the reps.
Yeah, I haven't seen the enough data yet to confirm that I'm the best.
Yeah, well, let's look at the last two rounds, including the round that we played at...
the park?
At Winter Park.
Winter Park, yeah.
The round prior to that...
In Mexico, in Huatulco.
In Huatulco, that's it. So we went out to play.
Yeah.
And you had some pretty career shots, by the way, in one of the Instagrams I hope you guys saw.
Yeah, it's got like over 30,000 views on his Instagram.
No, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow, it was worth it. I mean, that, I'm telling you, Moo, that is the most spectacular 7-iron shot I've ever witnessed in my life.
Thank you.
32,000.5 to be exact.
I've never hit, like, I've hit some really cool seven irons. I've hit one for a hole in one, and that's the only one that would beat it. Because it's a hole in one, and it was, it came off perfectly.
Right.
But yours was the most spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's cool.
And it was like a Bagger Vance movie. Right. The shot that took the tournament. And then that day we figured out that we're going to have you look at the hole because the speed of the greens were just perfect. Mm-hmm. They weren't too fast. They weren't too slow. I said, you know, Mutt Moo, you were a basketball player. Mm-hmm. Would you look at the hoop or would you look at your ball? Yeah. Obviously, you look at the hoop.
Right,
And you see the arc and, you know, it's like you don't even think. You know exactly how this is going to roll off your hands and it's all reaction and feel. Mm-hmm. So I had you look at the hole and your speed control was night and day, like a huge contrast.
It was less tense over the ball.
Yeah, because, I mean, I oftentimes we'd see you, you know, end up 8 feet short on a 40-foot putt.
Yeah, because I'm
told, you know, and exactly, too tense. And then you look at the hole and you're threatening it. Threatening the hole every time you roll the putt.
Yeah.
And at Winter Park, because we were on Bermuda, it was a different kind of, the one in Huatulco was Paz Palom.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I, you know, pronounced that properly. So, but the owner of the golf course is very particular about the seed that he likes to put down on his golf course.
Yeah.
And he likes the best.
Yeah.
And the greens in Huatulco at the Las Parotas Golf Club are spectacular.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah.
Like, they're unbelievable. It's like the best greens in the southern hemisphere that I've ever putted on. And what comes close is a golf course I played in Naples where the seniors had just played. It'll come back to me. And it's a player's golf course and caddies only, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
And it's just beautiful, beautiful greens. And it's a different hybrid of Bermuda green that they had on those greens there, and that's the only one that comes close to Las Parotas, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see you perform looking at the hole. So I invite you to go check out. You know, I have a video on that on YouTube. I'll have to get the title up for you guys. But if you go putting Sean Clement and you rifle through all the different videos we have on putting on YouTube, you'll eventually see the, you know, looking at the hole video on that. I think it's fine tuning your putting stroke is where I have that on. But on chipping, because it's a little bit more range of motion, it's hard to look at the hole. Especially when you've got, you know, different lies and different grasses and the ball sitting down, it's sitting up, things like that. So you got to negotiate your task better.
Yeah.
But when you're putting, the putter's hanging from the shoulders, it's in balance. Mm-hmm. You're going to strike the ball solidly because the putter's in balance under your shoulders. So your technique is fantastic. And now you're just looking at the hole and you go, I'm just going to roll it that way. So there's no expectations. You're just reacting to the hole. Yeah. And because you're an athlete, you know, you're shining with it.
Yeah, it works.
So when you're chipping, though, it's all about the prediction process. And this is what I want you to consider when you go to Mesquite and you play. Which course are you guys going to play?
Sand Hollows in St. George.
In St. George.
Utah.
In Utah, which is right across, you know, it's very close by. It's only an hour away from Mesquite.
No, not even.
Not even.
35 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're going to look at the lie. And you're going to take a couple of practice strokes. And you're going to feel how much resistance the grass has to your blade, right? And you picture it. You say, okay, if I cut the grass like that, is the ball going to meet the center of my face? And you'll know whether or not. Mm-hmm. So then when you step to the chip, and this is what I worked on with Mark this morning with the sledgehammer. So first we took the kinks out with the sledgehammer. And so the sledgehammer is going to hang from the shoulders right in front of your feet, and you're just going to let it ride, and it's going to track its own arc. And there's no interference required. It just tracks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not that you're not going to put a 6-pound putter in your bag. It's way too heavy. It's no fun to carry. And it's going to make it extremely top heavy on the bag. No good.
Yeah.
There's no bueno. So, but you can use it to practice and really get a feel for when you're going to let momentum do the work. So the arm club unit hangs from the shoulders and you use momentum to shave grass in the direction that you want the ball to go on. And you pay attention to where it's shaving grass,
right?
Where it's bottoming out. And the ball's got to be just slightly behind where it's shaving grass because you want the dandelion stem to get cut first. So you set up over the ball, and you just pop a simple question. If I let momentum shave grass in the direction of my intermediate point, does it feel like I have to interfere? And if you don't know the answer to that, play the ball way too far forward. You say, okay, if I let momentum shave grass, does it feel, and it'll feel like you're going to drop kick the club and scull the ball way past the pin. And then a lot of people, when they go, well, you know, I'm afraid of going too far. But they don't realize and they're not aware that they're sculling it because they're playing it too far forward. And then when they push on the club and they don't end up sculling it, they end up flipping the wrist because they got to go find it. And they're adding a lot of loft to the club. So then the ball lands short and doesn't roll anywhere. So they're not catching it on the way down. So it's either going to be really short or really long, and then that's what's confusing to everybody, and then they don't know what to do, and they're standing over the chip, and then they get the chip yips. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a buffet of hesitations. Mm. So, play the ball too far back now. If you let it fall, you'll miss the ball. Now, where do you play the ball so that when you let momentum shave grass, you're going to catch the ball first, and you don't feel the need to interfere or manipulate? And there's the sweet spot. So if you're too far from the ball, and Mark was going, well, I'm doing my practice swing, and sometimes I'm hitting the grass, and sometimes I'm not. I said, bring the club closer to you. He says, like this. And he brings it closer, and then he starts, you know, performing the chip again. He says, hey, I'm hitting the grass all the time now. Mm-hmm. So it's so easy to reach, because you're reaching for the ball because you're getting ready to hit the ball. Mm. Instead of letting momentum brush the grass, that's a different place. It's a different distance to ball. And so in the full swing, if you're getting ready to hit the ball, you're going to be too far away. If you're getting ready to control the swing, you're going to be too close because you're trying to hold the arms close to you so you can use your body to guide your arms, because it's very hard to manipulate the club when you're too far from it. So what's the sweet spot? Well, when I let momentum whip the club and release in that direction, where's it want to cut grass? So the distance between you and the ball is very different in the full swing and when you're chipping, depending upon what your focus is. If you're getting ready to hit the ball, good luck to you. If you're getting ready to shave grass in the direction of your intermediate point with momentum, then we're good. Now, how much momentum do you think you need? Well, if you're taking a practice swing and you don't have a place to land the ball in your mind, you're wasting your time. You won't know how much momentum to use. So when you're doing your practice swing, it's in relation to where you want to land the ball. So you Goldilocks it. Hey, with that much momentum, not with that much force, you're not stick handling it. With this much momentum, way too soft, where's that? Oh, it's not going to land on the green. It's going to be short. It won't get on. And with this much momentum, it feels like it's going to land past the hole. But with this amount of momentum, it feels like it's going to land on the front of the green, where the best place to land it is in the first third, and let it roll the other two-thirds to the hole. So with this much momentum, it feels like it's going to land in that magical first third. Okay. So with this club landing in the first third, do I have what it takes to roll the other two-thirds into the hole? Mm-hmm. So if the answer is yes, then you've got the right option. And now you've taken a lot of stress out of your system already. So then you get set up to the ball and you say, okay, does it feel like momentum is moving through the ball towards the intermediate point? Check. This ball position will allow the ball to be struck prior to the grass being cut? Check. So as you get into that bubble, you have less and less and less to do, to manipulate, to interfere with. And then you're left with a situation where you don't feel the need to interfere at all.
Right.
You're in the zone. Mm-hmm. What's left? Well, it's about this much momentum that way. And there you have it. That's when the chip-ins come. That's when you start threatening the hole. You know, who is it that chipped in three times over the course of the Arnold Palmer?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think it was Jordan Spieth.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he would put himself in chip-in territory and really threaten the hole, if not chip in. So if you leave yourself, you take the right option. So to finish this off, you're off the tee. You say, okay, I need to put the ball there. So I want to comfortably put the ball there. So give yourself, it's going to plug. You're not going to go very far. So you say, well, I'm going to accept whatever I get. So I'm going to do a smooth driver there, and it's going to plug. So be it. I'll take a fairway wood towards the green if I need to, right? So then in the second shot, you say, okay, the pin's back, so I want the center of the green at worst. I don't want to short side myself over this green, so I'm going to hit a smooth XYZ. And that should leave me, if I miss it, it's going to leave me short or pin high, which is going to give me a great option.
Right.
Right? That's why so many players on tour, you'll notice pin high is a good place to be on tour, especially pin high on the proper side of the green. Like if we go to hole number 6 on Royal, you don't want to be long. You don't want to be left because mm-hmm. you got no chance there.
Mm. Yeah.
You want to be short or right, mm-hmm. and then that gives you the options for that particular green.
I was like, I hate that hole. Don't we all?
Yes, and so. You want to be in a specific spot off the tee. You want to be a specific spot. So you choose the right options, and it just keeps taking the pressure off of you. And then if you do have to chip, you're chipping from an easy spot. There's nothing worse than at the beginning of the season having to chip from a short-sided position because you haven't practiced a short game. These are the toughest shots. These are really the toughest shots in golf is a short-sided chip shot because you're relying on your touch through grass that you don't normally practice in and all that stuff to where you have to land it on a dime, really. Because if it's just a little too long and you're gone, it's like now you're struggling to not three putt on your way back to the hole.
Yeah.
And Pete Dye tends to create golf courses like that. I remember playing the Teeth of the Dog is another one that I had fits on. Even if I did have a caddy, you know, you're coming in on a par 5 and you overshoot the hole and you're going, I'm going to be lucky to make bogey.
Jeez.
So I'm over the green in 2 mm-hmm. and the rough is really thick at the front of the green and the green is sloping severely from back to front and there's no hope. It doesn't matter where you land it. It's gone.
It's not fun.
So I'm going, okay, here's a wasted shot. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna land it there just in case, and I landed there perfectly, and off it went, and now I'm in this thick rough at the front of the green, over a lip, and so I hash it out of that about 20 feet and take 2 putts.
That's not fun,
yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And here I am. I'm going, okay, I'm just over the green in 2. I have a nice birdie opportunity coming.
Yeah, like.
And Mr. Dye says, not so fast, son.
Not today.
Not so fast today.
Not today.
Not today.
Try next
time. And that's the Players' Championship. I mean, and that's where I hope that we hear from the new crop of commentators that, you know, how are they planning this hole? I want to hear the plan. You know, here you got to be here off the tee and. You want to be there, and then in the second shot, I mean, you got to aim at the tower and let it bleed off this way, and if you miss, this is where you want to miss, so that you know the kinds of shots that they're preparing for, mm-hmm. and then that's where you can really tune in on the technique, right? Then you look at their swings, and you can see if that body language matches the shot that they're calling on. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think, you know, throughout the years, they haven't had enough of that descriptive, you know, hey, pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of swing you're about to see because this is the only option.
Mm. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And or this particular player plays, you know, usually a draw, a nice low draw on these wedge shots, and you're going to see the ball one hop and stop and really suck back. Mm-hmm. You know, prepare yourself for a big divot, right, and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. Like it paints the picture a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of going, well, look at this elbow and look at that knee and you know, the body part bonanza that they've been calling on, and that's where I find that it's been such a disservice to the listener.
It's so draining to listen to like the negative stuff all the time.
Yeah, he didn't do this, and he should have done this,
and that's wrong, and it's just like, can we get some positivity over here?
We're not defective.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you know, I would love to know what's and that's what's fun. Is the mic. They have a microphone on one hole for one player. Mm. Mm-hmm. And Ricky Fowler was, I have to go back and see the recording on that, because he was on the mic and he had overshot the green and flushed his shot, and he was just all surprised. That. Mm-hmm. So I want to know what was going through his mind when he was over that shot. Mm-hmm. And there was another one where Tom Kim.
Tom Kim and the first one in Phoenix,
right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was a second shot on a par five, and he just, you know, had a beautiful conversation with the caddy. Mm. You could hear the conversation, the planning of the shot, and he executed to perfection and just over that hump and down, and he had a beautiful eagle.
That was a nice shot, yeah.
Oh, it was amazing, you know, and it was really great to get that description and to be able to pull it off in that moment.
That's true, yeah.
And you know, when you hear about Hogan saying, you know, I would basically hit about six shots to my personal satisfaction in a round of golf. So when you hear them describe a shot that they want to hit, this is what I want to do, and they go through with the caddy, and they do the numbers, and this is where we want to leave the shot, and you know, and they boil it down to, okay, here's the option, here's the club, go.
Yeah.
And there's no talk about, you know, I'm going to put my elbow here and I'm going to make sure my knee, and I'm going to keep my head there. And there's none of that.
Because in the tournament, they're not thinking about that kind of stuff. They're thinking about where they need to go, what shots they need to hit, what pictures they need to create.
That's right.
And that's what the viewers want to hear, too.
They're reacting to a picture.
Yeah.
And so to see somebody pull it off, and if they don't pull it off, what was going through their minds?
Right.
Were they making sure of something? You know, I was making sure that I wasn't going to do this.
Yeah, or maybe they didn't feel like 100% comfortable with the club selection, or they had like a little doubt or just whatever it is, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And one of us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nicer to hear that kind of stuff from the players, because it really just humanizes them in a way.
Yes.
You know, these are the 1% of golfers, and even they make mistakes.
Well,
you know?
All you have to do is go to a PGA Tour event, and you're going to see a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, well, that's when we went to the LPGA Tour event in Boca Raton a couple years back. That was the first time that I had seen the LPGA players hit in person.
Yeah.
And it was such a contrast from what you see on TV. I was like, oh, they're human.
Yes.
Like, they're not these robots that the TV makes them out to be, you know?
Yep.
But they are, one, better at good misses.
Yes.
And two, they're better at making their up and downs, right?
Yes.
So there's a big difference in that aspect of their game, because they're going to miss shots like anybody, but they're able to manage those little mistakes a lot better than the average golfer.
Well, the description that this whole show was about
is
personified when you go see a tour event.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun. I remember going around the golf course with Brad Faxon, following Brad Faxon at the Canadian Open. You remember at St. George's? We went there as a family, right?
Yeah.
And we followed Brad Faxon for 2-3 holes. And that day, on the stats, he had hit 4 greens in regulation and shot even par.
Damn.
That's crazy.
And St. George's is no pushover. That's a difficult golf course. You remember the humps and valleys, and
yeah,
a lot of the pros were having fits on that golf course.
Yeah,
and then it was like nothing. He, you know, maybe hit it in the rough, maybe hit it anywhere near the green,
yeah,
and get up and down.
Yeah,
like he'd get up and down all the time. It was like nothing. And I remember, you know, on PGA Tour radio, he was actually at that golf course I was talking about, not Calabasas, which is in the LA area. It starts with a C, and it's in Naples. And you guys know it. They just played a Champions Tour event 2 weeks ago there, and he was in the pro-am. And they were talking, you know, they were just, you know, hearing him describe his shots, and he hits it to an impossible spot. Tight lie, over a bunker, you know, really. And while his playing partner was describing it, he was just chatting. And then you hear, you just did not do that, right? And just put it to tap in range. And they were describing the shot. It was just like this impossible flop shot, mm-hmm, off a tight lie, you know, and it's just like, it was nothing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I feel like if we get that more behind the scenes perspective of how they play in tournaments, it just makes you appreciate the level of skill and talent that they have, yeah, and their ability to manage themselves around such difficult golf courses. I think that would be like a huge, huge component to add. Because they do it a little bit, but I feel like if they did that as, like, the mainstay of the commentary, it would, like, open up so many eyes to... And I think that's the nice thing about, like, the Full Swing documentary and the Breakpoint documentary and the Formula One documentary on Netflix is that you appreciate it so much more when you see the little things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Well, like when Brooks Koepka was just struggling mentally, you know?
Yeah.
It's stuff that you don't see behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The other thing, and that's one of the things I'd love for them on the PGA Tour, you know, when they pick who was the one that was able to put a score together today. Mm-hmm. Like when they do, like on the Golf Channel, they do the Golf Central. Mm-hmm. And they just put all the highlights of all the best shots of the day. Mm-hmm. I want to see the guy who hit it in the crap and then went from crap to crap and then was able to put it up and down, got it up and down, hit 8 greens in regulation that day and put together a 1-under score,
yeah,
to keep him in the tournament.
Yeah.
You know?
Because those are like the score. Cinderella stories, right?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Those are the cool moments that you can see how much it takes to, you know, go up against that kind of adversity. Those are the cool moments. Yep. And those are always like, oftentimes those are the cooler highlights when you see, you know, somebody chip it in or,
yep,
like, I remember that.
Chip it in for bogey or chip it, yeah, in for par. You know, it's like.
There's this one shot that Jordan Spieth hit a year ago or a couple years ago. He was like on the, just the side of like, a cliff,
yeah,
essentially.
Oh,
remember
that was at Pebble Beach.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
second shot on 8.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
See, those are the cool things, right? It's, mm-hmm, like when you see players like that pull shots off like that, like, yeah, that's cool.
That's so cool.
That's like fun to watch than just like the cookie cutter nice shots. I'm like, you can all hit nice shots. And we know that.
And everybody, everybody had a cow. When they were watching them going, I can't believe he's actually going to try this shot,
mm-hmm, yeah,
because it's a cliff there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You fall there. I mean, it's like, it's life threatening.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So he's literally on the edge of the cliff pulling off the shot. And, yeah, then they show, okay, we grew the rough a little bit earlier so we don't get into a situation like that. And the red line is much more inside.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to see that ever happening again because we don't want to lose anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like, it just shows, mm-hmm, you the importance of a shot like that. And just TV just doesn't do it justice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because I remember going to the Masters, and I was absolutely, you know, bewildered at how hilly Augusta National is. Mm. Like, you look at hole number 18, and you're thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's got a slight slope up. Mm. And then you actually walk up that hole, and you're thinking, am I on the same golf course?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I actually had to pause and go, this really doesn't look like 18 that I normally see on TV at all. Yeah. Hole number eight, same thing. I mean, you see a little bit more of the slope on TV on hole number eight, but I mean, it's like, it's cardiac hill, wow. You know?
Yeah.
It's incredibly hilly. Mm-hmm. And the front of 15, mm-hmm. like, wow. You know, I see Phil Mickelson hitting bunker shots where the pin was up front. And if he was on the pin, it was in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Bones was at the, you know, at the water getting ready to catch the golf balls that were going to roll in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see the front of that hole and you're thinking, now I see why the ball always rolls back and it's impossible for it to hold that slope. And you look on TV, I'm going, wow, it's like, yeah, that's, why does it keep rolling back into the water? Yeah. And then you see it in person, you go, wow, that's crazy.
That's a tough shot, yeah.
And that's where, like, the commentary comes in, right? Like, the importance of the commentary for the people watching on TV.
Yeah. Just don't say bikini wax.
Oh, yeah.
That was Gary McCord. He actually got uninvited to the Masters as a commentator.
Oh.
So he was describing the speed of the greens at Augusta. And he says these greens are so fast they bikini wax them.
Oh,
not the greatest choice of words for describe, right? Yeah.
And so he wasn't invited since then. He was he was actually banned from the Masters for saying that. So yeah, so you be careful how you describe as a commentator. You know,
yeah.
Sure, yeah.
It can be a very interesting situation. So you wouldn't have that problem commentating on YouTube, though.
No.
Probably not.
Probably not, no.
I mean, maybe not everybody will agree with it, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Can't please everybody.
You can't please everybody, no. So on that, I hope that everyone has an amazing end of week and that you're outdoors practicing your favorite activity called golf. And we'll see you in the next one.
All the best.
Take care.